I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge from WNIJ. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got good news. It's based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether a teacher, a coach, or professor, you know, we learn so much from so many people who are educators in our lives, even outside of the traditional classroom. But every educator we have on this show is nominated by the folks who listen. So we want you to be a part of the show with us. Please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations at teacherslounge@niu.edu. Today on the show, it is my conversation with Ashley Carls. She's a special education teacher at Ottawa High School, and over the past few years, she's built her own curriculum for a class that helps her students transition to college. You know, it is a daunting transition for everyone, and especially for special education students. So Ashley spends a lot of time helping them understand their rights and how to navigate college, and a big part of it is also building up their confidence and the soft skills that you need to succeed anywhere. And she was just reminded about how important that was the other day when she took her students to the local community college for placement exams.
I said, "I'm proud of you for taking this placement and scoring. But the biggest thing that day, and what I'm proud of you is that the lady in the cafeteria told me that you were the most respectful group of students that she's ever had. So it's not about the test you took, it's about you being a good person."
We talk about the common misconceptions people have about special education, what keeps her passionate after 20 years in the classroom, and why she became an educator in the first place. But before our conversation with Ashley, we have a story we want to share. Federally funded TRIO programs provide services to disadvantaged students from middle school through college. And this year, the Trump administration cut several TRIO grants in Illinois. And I got the chance to learn more about how students use that program and what they could lose. A few years ago, Sam Sutton moved from California to Illinois and enrolled at Elgin Community College. She was homeschooled her whole life, which made the social part of school difficult, especially in a new place, away from family, and she was financially unstable after the move, which made it daunting just to enroll. Her grades were pretty good, but she didn't feel connected.
When I would struggle on an assignment, I wouldn't ask my teachers for help. I would just like suck it up and ask the internet.
Then her art club advisor told her about TRIO Student Support Services, known as SSS. It's one of 8 federal TRIO programs and one of 3 offered at Elgin Community College. TRIO is funded by the U.S. Department of Education, particularly for low-income, first-generation, and students with disabilities. And SSS provides one-on-one counseling, tutoring, and other assistance. Soon, Sutton's art club advisor became her TRIO coordinator, which she says helped her blossom as a student.
She actually went with me to talk to my professor. She was there making sure that not only was I feeling supported and I had somebody to turn to, but to make sure I knew what questions to ask.
But Sutton says TRIO's helped her with much more than just academics.
Moving out here away from my family, I obviously didn't have a job and I was not financially stable. They put me in connection with the food pantry we have here on campus and they helped me find jobs.
Natalie Leistering says that's how TRIO's supposed to work. She's Elgin Community College's Associate Dean of Student Success.
When students have those one-on-one meetings with a student support person, they're more likely to succeed than someone that doesn't.
That's backed up by federal data. In 2019, during the first Trump administration, the Department of Education released a study on TRIO student support services, and it found that SSS students at four-year schools were 18% more likely to complete a degree than similar students who weren't in the program. And at community colleges like Elgin, the difference was even more significant. Students like Sutton at two-year schools were 48% more likely to earn a degree, certificate, or transfer to a four-year school. The nonprofit Council for Opportunity in Education supports and advocates for TRIO, and a spokesperson told WNIJ that this year, the Trump administration has cut over 100 TRIO programs across the country, with more than 40,000 students no longer receiving services. Here in Illinois, the administration has canceled 3 programs, which represents over $1 million in grants and more than 1,000 students no longer receiving TRIO services. The spokesperson says they could not disclose which Illinois institutions had programs canceled. but that the canceled TRIO grants all had diversity-related goals or efforts. Elgin Community College has not had its grant cut. Associate Dean Leistring says their TRIO SSS still serves 362 students. But remember, TRIO is not just student support services. Michelle Ramirez runs Elgin's SSS program and says their college offers two other TRIO programs that serve another 634 students.
We have TRIO Upward Bound. It's designed to help high school students gain skills and succeed in high school and college. And then we have TRIO Talent Search Transitions, and it's designed to help middle schools and high school students to graduate high school.
Sam Sutton says that TRIO has changed her life.
Originally, I was just going to do the two-year degree and go into the workforce. But with the help of TRIO, I have a lot of scholarship opportunities.
She says they've helped her apply for scholarships, align transfer credits, and organize campus visits to shop around for the right four-year school. She says TRIO deserves a lot of credit for her success, and she's become a sort of unofficial ambassador.
I carry their business cards in my wallet and in my backpack. Yes, I will give them out.
She says that federal cuts at other schools are really disappointing.
It's just so heartbreaking. Everybody should have the opportunity we have here. I'm a great student because of it, so.
President Trump's 2026 budget proposal calls for eliminating TRIO completely. Now it is time for my conversation with Ottawa High School special education teacher Ashley Carls, and we start off talking about her transition program that she does in conjunction with Illinois Valley Community College and the head of their Center for Accessibility and Neurodiversity, Tina Hardy. So if you hear us refer to Tina, that's who that is.
I love teaching at IVCC. That was always a dream of mine. And for her to give me that opportunity and be able to follow some of my kids too,
yeah,
and see them be so successful. One of them emailed me yesterday, just they're in education classes, so he interviewed me, and it was just neat to tell him how I really feel about certain concepts and then listen to how far he's come and his hard work and how proud I am of him. And I hope he knows that. I do tell him a lot, but I just hope they know that they tried so hard to get where they are, and there's a lot of challenges in special education, but Tina Hardy makes it so much easier. Like it's like me passing them to their next mom. And she's just, it eases my heart because I know they're going to be okay.
Yeah. I want to talk about Get Set and like just in general, the transition part of your job that you do, because I know that you obviously teach a post-secondary prep course. I don't know if that's the main part of what you do now or if that's just a piece of it. Or is it, what does that look like?
I teach four, that's most of my day.
That's most of
your day.
I
teach all of the seniors that have an IEP. And my boss, Sally, she came up with the idea, and I was like, yeah, we don't have anything like that. And so what I do in that class is prepare them for their next step. And sometimes I feel like I wish the regular ed students had this too.
Yeah.
And we really need to work on just getting them prepared. And so then this Get Set program, I wish more people took advantage of it. And I know it's building every year. I teach mainly the social-emotional part of it. That's my jam. I love that. And so Tina gives me that opportunity to just mentally prepare them, emotionally prepare them for what their next step in their life.
Yeah. Let's back up and let's try to talk a little bit more in depth about what that transition course looks like for you at the high school level when you were working on that. I know that's a lot about, again, in general, helping students figure out what their next step is and how to achieve that. I know that there's all sorts of components to that about what's the,
I know,
like,
I could go on for hours.
For you,
I love this class.
about, know your rights, that type of thing too, especially
yes,
for students with disabilities. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
So I develop this curriculum and I change it every year based on the group of students that I get. This is the most students I've ever had wanting to go to college, which
wow,
is phenomenal.
How many?
17 of mine, which is huge. Like I started years ago and it was about two or three. So it's nice to know that I'm exposing them to this and they know that they can be and know what's out there.
Yeah.
I take them early in the year and I talk to them about what is your passion, and I get to know them because you really can't teach kids unless you get to know them and know their background and their experiences and what they love. And so I take that, and the kids that are interested in college, we visit. We're very blessed to have a campus in Ottawa that they can go and take classes, and that if they're a little bit nervous, that would be a great start. We go and visit that. And then Tina Hardy comes into my classroom and talks to them about college. And then we kind of focus and narrow down what they'd like to do. And we kind of just do step by step, helping them, helping their parents too, be successful in applying. So we do that. And then we also have to transfer their IEP to college. So that's a big thing too.
And having that's a big step, because that's very different rules and regulations and everything like that.
Yeah, so they have to understand that. Yeah. They have it, but it's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And a lot of my students, when they come into my classroom, they don't really know what their accommodations are. They don't really know why they have an IEP. So that's really that day's really challenging. And I print out a summary of their IEP, and we go through it, because it's important to know the paperwork, especially when they're leaving me. And a lot of them have no idea. You know, they got it in third grade, and they've never understood why they're in these classes. So it's really good to understand their skills, maybe something that they struggle with a little bit, and how they can build upon that too.
Right.
So we focus on that, and then I just took a group of kids. We get to take the placement test, and then Tina helps interpret it, like those scores, and see where they're at and what type of classes they could take. And then we also take them to choose classes. So if parent or guardians can't come to meet with a counselor, me and other teachers or the social worker or whoever can come step in and sit on those meetings with them. And then they have that opportunity to pick classes that are more appropriate for them and probably the professors that work with them. And then they get ready to go. And it's a lot. It's emotionally preparing them is the biggest part of my class. I can't get to that part unless emotionally and social emotion, like all of that stuff won't matter unless I really understand them at that level.
Right. And you were mentioning that right now, as we're getting close to like the end of the first semester into winter, that all of that, making that transition, graduating high school, going to college, all of that feels so much more immediate. All of that feels so real now.
Yes.
And so, you know, both academically that you're having to wrap your mind around that, but also just like the emotional part of that, right? Like moving away from a kind of system and structure that you're really used to and hopefully you're really comfortable with, and that, you know, even if you don't exactly know what your IEP is and what accommodations you're receiving, you have all that built in. That confidence to now, what does that look like? Even if I, you know, have a decent idea of what I want to do, what is that really going to look like? What and same thing with the knowing your rights part of it. Like, what am I actually entitled to? And how do I even know what the right questions to ask are if I want to do that?
That's a big part of it, is that communication. Because of phones and texting and all that, that's a huge barrier with having those conversations, like those office hours that you take advantage of and you have to sit down with that professor and have a conversation about a grade or... That's a big part of my curriculum. The first thing we really do is talk about how to write a professional email. That is huge.
Yeah.
And just building it up, how to be professional in that aspect. So when they do go to college, they have that. Because I try to teach them that writing that email is your first impression. They might not meet you in person until later. So writing whatever you write in that email is what their perspective of you is before you even meet them.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing the transition part of this?
Transition's been, it's about been 6-7 years now. Yeah. And we just continue to build upon it every year. And it's really fun. It's nice to see where it's going. And I just... Tina and I love to see where our kids are at. One of mine is doing a podcast, like just like this.
Just
I would
like this.
Never have thought that, and I'm so proud of him. And he comes back and speaks to my own students so they can see, and that's more realistic too, is this is where they're at right now. You can do it too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious. So in that 6 or so years since you've been doing it, you mentioned like you build on these things, it evolves, like in what are some of the ways that you feel like it has evolved the most, or things that you've learned or from doing this for a handful of years now?
I set higher expectations for my students. That's a big thing. And I also, we started a career fair at our school, but my students run it. And that has been, in the last 2 or 3 years, the best thing I've ever experienced as an educator, is seeing students put on their own career fair and then that day use everything I've taught them throughout the year and really shine. And they are just absolutely, I told you I wasn't getting emotional, but just to watch them do something that I never would have thought of in my senior year, and they just take it and go with it. And they're so much more creative and thoughtful than I've ever in my entire 20 years teaching. So it's really cool to watch that process of the career fair and how it evolves every year too. So that was a nice way of putting my students their confidence is a challenge that day.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of ways this has evolved for you, whether it be the career fair or the transitions that you're talking about, raising expectations is empowering them to have that confidence. And yeah, like that they, and setting high expectations, it seems like is definitely.
And that's tough in special education because people think the opposite, and you have to give them an opportunity to grow. And I always say to lead with love in my classroom, because if there's not that trust and understanding and know that someone really cares about you and is going to just back you up completely, then none of this will be successful.
Well, I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have, especially when it comes to special education, is to be like, because someone needs help or some kind of assistance, that means we shouldn't set high expectations for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think people fall into that trap sometimes.
And the students do too, because they see what they struggle with and hyper-focus on that. And a lot of the times at the beginning of the year, I really like to focus on their strengths and what skills they have and putting that on a resume or a cover letter. Like, this is what you're great at. This is what I see you're great at. But what about you personally? What do you feel that you're great at?
Yeah. Because that's one thing too, right, is hearing it from your teacher is different than feeling it yourself. And so trying to get them to actually be the ones to be like, actually, I hear what you're saying and I believe it, or I know what I'm good at too.
I embody it. I'm confident with it. I will continue with it. It's hard to instill that. It really is. But a lot of them catch on with having these experiences their senior year with me, and I've seen them grow so much.
You said you've been teaching for about 20 years?
Almost,
so?
19 and a half.
19 and a half, so
yeah,
next year will be 20?
Yeah, we're almost there. Yeah, big 2-0. Can't believe it.
None of us could ever believe how long we've been doing.
Wow.
Well, and it's interesting too, because like in that time, obviously, like special education and school system in general changes, right? Like education changes, technology changes, laws change.
Yes.
But also you change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably a fascinating thing to look back on where you were when you started, both in terms of, you know, what the day-to-day, again, when it comes to technology or policy or whatever it might be, that was probably different, but also like you're different and the things that you're passionate about and things that kind of ignite that passion for education for you probably feel a lot different than they did when you started.
Oh, definitely. And having an administration and other teachers that support you with that, the way I love special education, because we're not like math and science, like there's not this book that you follow or this curriculum that you follow. You can be creative in what you want and adjust it to your students' interests and all of those type of things. So I've always felt that I love this because you can be so creative in what you do. And every year, I know AI is a big thing now and people can type anything in and write a lesson in 2 seconds, but I enjoy sitting there and creatively come up with a lesson plan and really try it out. And it's not always 100% successful, and maybe they're not in the mood that day. So I have to continue to change them, modify them, and make them, I don't know, fun is a great thing. Laughing's a great thing in the classroom. I know it's all business sometimes, but you have to laugh at yourself. You have to just enjoy every moment. Even if you're tired, be honest with them and be real with them and saying, you know what, I'm having a tough day, but can you help me through this? And they really are great about that. They're very responding.
Yeah, that's it's another thing that we talk about a lot on the show is that not breaking any news for anyone, but teaching is very hard and it can be very stressful.
Yes.
And so, you know, there are, I'm sure, different things that happen throughout the course of a day or a week that remind you why you love what you do. But also, you know, you have to make sure that you're doing those things for yourself that, again, like keep that flame lit.
Yes.
So you're able to keep that passion. Because I think, you know, you could probably be an accountant and not have like an absolute like on fire passion for accounting.
Right.
Maybe you can. I guess I can't say I know a lot about it, but
my relationship with math is, you know, interesting.
But teaching and particularly special education, that seems like if you don't have a passion for it, it seems like that would be very difficult to do that job really, really well.
Yes. Yeah. You have to love what you do. And yes, it's super stressful. And some days I stand outside my room and I'll cry a little bit and come back in. Or the best thing for me I've ever learned is just to be real, who you are with your students. I like to talk to them about what I've gone through personally, and that helps me relate to them. I tell them about going to therapy. I've been going to therapy over 10 years and how much I appreciate my therapist and how she has got me through so much. And I try to tell them my 20s were not easy and this is what happened to me. And then it's easy to have those conversations with them and they know, okay, if she can do this and she appreciates us and she's been through all of this, she's still growing and still can have empathy for others and care for others.
Yeah. And she still keeps coming back every day.
I do. I really enjoy coming to talk to you on a Friday, but I do miss them, and preparing them yesterday for me being gone was not easy. That's the toughest thing for me, is because when I'm not there, I'm always like, oh, is this person okay with this? And they have this on, and it's always on your mind. And they try to say, leave it when you leave the door, or me driving home in silence, like leave it all there. But you can't. I've never been able to. And I have my own kids now. So that kind of transfers to that, is it made me appreciate what I do so much more. And
oh,
their
really?
Teachers too.
Yeah. I want to, we've been talking a lot about special education, and mm-hmm. we were talking about your experience and everything. I want to take a step back and talk about your journey to becoming a special education teacher.
Oh, wow.
And your kind of a teacher origin story. But I want to start back with, you know, one of the things we hear all the time on the show is that people become teachers for generally one of two reasons. It's either A, they want to be the teacher that they had for other people, or B, they want to be the teacher that they didn't have.
Yes.
And so I'm always curious, like, there's a lot of teachers who probably had amazing experiences in school, some teachers that probably didn't. Just generally for you growing up, did you like school? Like, what was your relationship to school? Were you someone that was like, oh, your third grade teacher knew exactly that you were going to be a teacher because you were kind of, you know, shadowing and helping write them lessons plans or something like that? Like, what was it
That's
like?
That's my daughter right now. She's the boss in the classroom. So, yes. I was the quiet one, and like I spent a lot of time in the nurse's office.
Yeah.
And I loved her because she really cared about me, but I also loved my teachers too. And I was having a tough time, and this one teacher would always come to lunch with me in the lunchroom and eat with me. Like, I remember that square pizza. We'd sit there and we'd talk.
Gosh.
I know, so delicious.
Are we still doing square pizzas?
No, it's gone, thank God.
It's gone, okay.
But I'd still probably eat that right now.
I definitely would. Yeah. Just cheese, though. For some reason, it feels like it can't have any toppings.
Nothing.
Interesting. Anyway.
But those are the memories that stick with me, is her taking that time out of her lunch period and coming to sit with me and ease my emotions. And I don't remember a lot from when I was a kid, but those type of things I remember. And growing up in the suburbs, it was a lot of, like, crazy, high-paced life. But then I was given the opportunity in sixth grade, just during my lunch period, to work with special education students. And there was this one young man that just, my heart just grew every day. And who wants to go to recess when you get to spend your time with all of these children that are absolutely wonderful? And so that was where it kind of sparked.
Oh, are there any stories from that period of your life that stand out about when you first got to do that and work with those students?
I think that was the first time I felt emotion and empathy for another student my age. Because you go through, you know, all the drama and the boyfriend stuff.
Of course.
But then going there for a half hour during my recess time, I realized who I was and who I want to be just then. So that was my moment. But then I went to IVCC and I thought I wanted to be a police officer and then a PE teacher.
So in that moment, even though you had that passion for it and you felt really connected, it didn't immediately translate to, I should do this professionally, or I should be a special
education
teacher.
I knew I wanted to help people.
Right. But what exactly that looked like wasn't immediately clear.
No. And I knew I wanted, so then I started taking classes at IVCC that were focused more on education, and I loved it. And then I went to ISU and I had some wonderful teachers there. And then I got really lucky in my student teaching experience. I was with Marty Kuhn, who whenever somebody asks you why are you a teacher? Why did you continue teaching? It's him. And he was my student teacher. And then I got lucky enough that halfway through the school year, because you have to go 4.5 years in special education, and it's tough that half a year to find a job or you sub, or I was lucky enough, they hired me right on the spot at Ottawa. And so right after I graduated, I started working there. So that was lucky. And he really led me those first few years into that scariness of being a new teacher and then that confidence that I always talk about with you.
Yeah. What was that period like when you were really new and you're trying to get your, you know, feet underneath you and you're having like, you know, like, I don't know if you're a big sports fan, but you know, like people joke about like your like welcome to the NFL moment where like, oh, actually like the buck stops with me and I'm the one that's in charge right now and I either have to do it or not.
Yes.
And that can be really scary when you're surrounded by a classroom full of students.
And they're so close to you in age too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 21 and some of these students I was teaching were 18. So that was very tough to just be in control of that room and just have that, I don't know the right word for it, but just to take control. And I didn't have that. But him, Marty Kuhn, coming into my room and being my mentor really showed me what I need to do to make that shift to someone that's an educator and have empathy and show that for your students and lead with that. Rather than let me follow everything, I'm a new teacher, I need to do this, and instead just enjoy it and every day just be blessed that you are here with these kids and you are having such a huge influence on them.
Was Marty giving you maybe some of those lessons that you're trying to impart on new students now about confidence and knowing your strengths?
So we lost Marty to cancer right before he was about to retire, and that was really tough for me because him and his wife just took me in. They were like my family at the high school. But his daughter's working at the school with me now, so it's nice to have her there. Yes. And I will never forget, I mean, we still stay in touch, and she helps me at the career fair. And I was just very lucky to have that family aspect when I was starting teaching, because you just want to feel like you belong there too. And it's hard to, with, you know, 100 teachers at our school, to find that spot, that niche, and then where you feel comfortable.
Yeah. So that was, I think, a also perfect answer to one of the other questions that we always ask is about, again, those teachers you've had who you feel like inspired you. It seems like Marty is definitely one of the first things.
Always there with me. Oh, there's always signs. There's always, I always look up to him and thank him when little things happen for me within education, because I wouldn't be where I am without him.
Right. I'm sure there's moments in the classroom where something happens and you're like, I remember what Marty would have said about this.
Or how and I teach my kids, you know, about him and how he helped me. And there's always somebody in your life that's going to be there for you and help you through the tough times. But you make mistakes and you learn from them. But there's always going to be that person that cares about you. And you just have to find them and let down that wall too, but still have your boundaries and still love yourself. And that's what he taught me, was to love myself, because then if you don't love yourself, you can't love anybody else. And that's what I feel with education, is I really had to learn who I was as a person, and that took many years. And then
you have to work that out while you're doing the job. It's not like you work that out and then you teach.
And continuing education is something that I recommend for all educators, is just to keep learning. And I went and got 2 masters, and my second master's was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I would drive after school twice a week and drive up and go to this U of I extension and to learn from other educators in Chicago and be able to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation and learn so much. That was a huge impact on me too.
Yeah, that you have to keep growing and keep evolving as a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, again, when you are so busy and you have, you know, classes every single day, and it can be, you know, maybe a little easy to just put your head down and do the work and move on the next year and just kind of try to tread water a little bit. But, you know, again, we're talking about having a passion for something.
Yes,
it's really
most
important
definitely.
To like keep trying.
It can be overstimulating. Like as somebody who just got diagnosed with ADHD 2 years ago, I always knew something was different, and school was always a challenge for me, and I always had to work a lot harder.
Right.
So knowing that now really helps me relate to a lot of my students too, and knowing the strategies that I've taught them over the years that actually these are all working for me too, and I need to embody them on a daily basis and work hard, even though it might be a challenge for me that I can't find my papers that I just copied 5 minutes ago, but my students are like, oh, it's okay. You know, we'll take a couple minutes. What do you want to talk about? And they lead the classroom when I'm not mentally ready.
Yeah, we've talked so much about like passions and keeping a passion for education. Like for you right now, as we're sitting here, what are some of the big things that you feel like are keeping that fire lit for you? Is it the kind of social emotional part of it? Is it the you know, transitions thing? Is it a little bit of both? Is it all the above? Like, what do you feel like right now most excite you about your work?
Doing things like this with you, I love.
Thank you.
I love this, and thank you for all you do. I wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
And this is things like this are just so much fun for me as an educator and getting able to do this. But the social emotional part is number one. And it becomes more and more, I don't know how to say it, but you have to, I feel like I should go back and be a social worker and learn all of that. And
That could be your third master's.
Yeah. You're so sweet. I would like that. Maybe when my kids grow up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right. I just want to be able to be saying the right things. And so I continue to learn about mental health and all of that. And that's become the biggest passion for me because, like I've said before, you can't teach the academics until you've reached them emotionally. It's not going to happen. And
that's another like easier said than done type of situation, right? Like it's easy to be like, yeah, kids need to trust us. And then you're like, well, yeah, there's some parts about that that's kind of obvious, mm-hmm. right? Like people need to trust you to be able to, you know, then you know, learn from you. But like that is a really, really hard and ongoing thing mm-hmm. that you have to keep and build that trust and keep that trust.
Yes. And I really enjoy making lessons that are geared toward what they're passionate about, what their interests are. And that's why I love making new lessons every year because you get such a new batch of kids. They're never the same. And you learn so much from them. And I tell them that all the time. And like I said, they told me not to get emotional, but because I do cry a lot, but I wouldn't be here if I didn't have them and have these experiences on a daily basis. I'm truly blessed to have that. And as much as crazy as it is, and some days I want to go to sleep, you know, and hide under my desk at lunch, they keep me going and they really care about me too. And that empathy part of it is something that's so important. And it never ends. It never yeah. ends.
Can you give us a little bit of picture in about what that just, again, day-to-day social emotional focus can look like? Because again, I think a lot of people intuitively understand that like social emotional learning is very important. It's important to connect with your students on that level and keep building that trust. But again, just for I'm sure it's very different depending on the day, depending on the mm-hmm. student, depending on the moment. But can you give us just a little bit of a more picture in about what that kind of looks like, what it can look like for you in your classroom?
I try to teach things that I know that they're going through. And so I change every week. On a Sunday night, I'm like, okay, what did they go through emotionally last week? And what do we have to tackle this week?
So it is that responsive.
It is. And that's the only way to really reach them. We just talked about Veterans Day and we talked about PTSD because as a student, I always thought that it was only people in the military that were going through that. And then now that I know it, I went through all these years of therapy, I know what it actually is and a lot of my students are going through. So that was a great topic last week that we talked about. We call them Wellness Wednesday, but I kind of feel like it's every day of the week.
Every day.
Just Wednesdays.
Every day is Wellness Wednesday.
But I like to create that culture within my classroom that they can share these experiences. Or we have like meetings in the hallways. If they really need to talk to me, I'll take 5 minutes and stand with them and talk to them. And if they need to cry, they need to cry. If they need to, you know, put their head down that day, it's okay. I some of them work till 11, 12 o'clock at night, and they're supporting their families. So I used to be a rule follower, which I still am, don't get me wrong, but you have to give them a little bit of grace. And when they see that, then they become more responsive to my lessons and what I'm trying to teach them.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask that I always really enjoy asking teachers, and this is probably because my mom was a teacher, my stepmom was also a teacher, and so a great part of that is just at the end of the day, you get to come home and tell the people in your life all the stories of what happened today,
mm-hmm.
and that could be something really funny, that could be something really sad, that could be profound, it could just be silly.
Oh, yes.
I'm curious just for you, over the past couple of weeks, is there a moment or a story or just anything that stands out to you as like, this kind of exemplifies what my work is like?
Oh, it happens every day. I work in a hallway of women, and we're all special education teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So those little meetings in the hallway are a true blessing, and those little giggles or laughs, like, this is what I went through today, and this is what happened. And a lot of us have the same kids, so that support going from each class, we're like, this person's going through this. Make sure that you know that this is going on. But coming up, my kids really love to hear about my class and my kid. Who did this today? How's this person? And
yeah.
We FaceTime. One of my students, I saw them at Target when I was with my own daughter, and she met her, and now they color each other pictures.
Oh.
And we got to FaceTime her the other day after school, and my daughter was so excited. And those little moments to me make everything just, it's just so cool to have that relationship with my own students, and then they also have that. No, they know I'm a mom, and they know that I care about, and they call me mom at school, and it's just, I always say they're my kids. They're always going to be my kids. So it's cool that my own kids like to connect and ask me about when you pick up your kids after school and you always ask, how was your day? I get in the car and they ask me, mom, how was your day? Was everything okay? You know, did anybody yell at you today? Or did anybody, you know, was everybody happy? Did they like your lesson? Because I'll show them some of my lessons that I do. And it's just really cool to have that, you know, closeness with my home life and then my school life.
Yeah. Do you have again, this is all very responsive. It's all very customizable. Do you have one of your favorite activities or assignments or projects that you guys do? I mean, you mentioned the career fair and everything they do. Maybe that's also a good answer for it, but just something that you always look forward to.
Ooh, I look forward to a lot of things. The career fair is huge. Watching my students and the community is wonderful, and seeing all that play out is great. But the little lessons that I create, and they really just, I never thought I'd teach Othello. Like I went to school, like, not as an English teacher or a math teacher and all of that. And teaching Othello every year has just been a cool experience. And I came up with I like crafty lessons. So seeing students that really didn't think they could read Othello, read it. And then we have these great activities that they really shine and show me that they understood what they read. And they take turns reading the parts.
I was just about to ask. They get to perform it because that's got to be the best.
Reading out loud is scary. It's not easy. And they just took it and flew with it. And that was probably one of the best lessons I teach on a yearly basis. I love it.
The Othello, it's the best. I have interviewed so many high school English teachers specifically, that when they teach Shakespeare, right, like, you get to do Hamlet, and you get to see these these teens really embody the kind of emotional energy that goes into that play and everything. Maybe get out some styrofoam swords if we're really feeling ambitious with it. But that's so much fun. Like, I that's something that even, like, I remember in high school. And again, maybe it's no surprise given that I'm in radio and kind of doing my own type of performance now. But, like, doing, like, Streetcar Named Desire or something like that, you know. But, like, that's always – even though kids are very nervous about it sometimes, or it is difficult to read out loud and do that kind of performance, sometimes they surprise you in a really fun way.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. They come out of their shell, and it's so cool to see them. And some of these students never wanted to even do speeches in front of people, that anxiety. But then you create this little, you know, culture and family in your English class, and then everybody trusts each other. Nobody judges you by the way you read. And that's what I love about special education, too, is that you can just see that your lessons matter, and you can change the curriculum at any time to meet your students' needs, and they fly with it. They love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. I touched on a little bit earlier about how, like, you know, in the 20 years that you've been in education, teaching special education, that, like, obviously you change your approach, your own experiences change. Like you mentioned, like, how having kids really shifts your perspective in a big way, too. And again, like, I'm curious if you feel like curriculum and that kind of larger, like, structure and policy that is, like, here's what special education is, if that's something that you feel like has changed a good deal since you've been in education, or if there is flexibility enough where, you know, you, based on your experiences, you're able to craft things in the way that you want, regardless of how external forces might change.
I have always been lucky to be able to teach what I want, because you have to do that in special education. Things do change,
right,
and you change yourself, like we've talked about. And I've been really lucky to be able to team teach with other teachers and observe them and learn from each other. And I love what I'm teaching now, but I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have those experiences over the years. So teaching with another teacher is phenomenal. It's challenging at times because you're not the content leader. So I was the first one at our school to team teach, and that was scary.
You get to,
it's a whole
cede
new
a little bit of control over the environment, which can be tricky.
Yes, definitely. And then teaching math was not my strong point in school, but then having a teacher within the classroom to lead with that, but then I can also be this person that incorporates what I love to do, and that,
which is budgeting, right?
Yeah. I always am so honest with my kids in math about budgeting, because I never was really taught that, and I am not great at budgeting. But to be real like that and have those conversations and be like, this is what worked for me, what can work for you? So that is, over the years, being able to teach so many different subjects and so many different concepts have really made me who I am today as an educator.
Yeah. What's it like just been, you've been teaching for, it sounds like, most of your career at Ottawa, right?
Yeah. I've never worked anywhere else, and I love that I've been there that long.
Yeah. What's it like to, again, grow with an environment and a community like that, like, right? Like, obviously, schools change over 20 years, too.
Yes.
But what's it been like to, you know, see all those, you know, years of kids coming and going, and experience what 20 years, how things change, how they stay the same, all of that in one place?
I've learned to appreciate that everybody's different, and I've learned to approach, I could never be a boss of a, because I, working with adults is very hard for me. Like, I could walk into a classroom of kids and just start talking. But when I've had to present to other educators, that was very intimidating for me. But at Ottawa, I've been given those opportunities to start new things. We did a coffee cart years ago. And the support that you have within that community of those teachers is phenomenal. And just how passionate you are about it, you can see other people that are passionate about it, and you really connect with people. And some of my best of friends have been educators because we can relate. And I've learned to just apply myself in different ways and continue growing by putting myself out there, and then these people bringing me in and appreciating what I do and learning from them. I can't tell you enough how lucky I am to have been at the same school for 20 years. And I've been through many administrators and different teachers coming in and out, but you really have to appreciate what they're doing on a daily basis too. Like, I've learned, like, as an administrator, the fires that they put out in an entire day.
Yeah.
I never knew that. I thought, you know, this is all business. No, you know, you have to learn to respect them, and that they're going through the same thing too, and other educators are as well.
Yeah.
So that really has taught me a lot over the last 20 years, just being at the same school and learning.
The last two questions that we always ask, Ashley, are always about what's something you wish more people knew. And we usually frame it around education or teaching broadly, and then we'll focus one in specifically about, like, special education. So we'll start off with the more specific one, which is just the, what's just something about special education that you wish more people knew or think is more important than people might realize who aren't thinking about this and doing this every day?
Whenever you tell someone that you work in special education, it's always kind of like, oh, you do you, that. Oh, great. You know, thank you for doing all you do.
They treat you like you work for a charity or something.
Yes. And it's not because they're being ignorant. It's just they're inexperienced. They don't understand what that all is. And if you don't have a student in it, and you have no idea.
Yeah. But, and like the IEPs, all this is very complicated.
Yeah. And I don't expect people to know that. Yeah. But I think that works for every educator. When you say you're a teacher, I think that it's nice to tell them, you know, I'd appreciate what you do too. Or if you teach English, or you teach consumer ed, or you teach, we're all going through the same thing. And so that's very difficult for me to, you know, I like to teach people about it. And when someone asks me, you know, oh, what do? You know, they immediately jump to their own perception, which isn't a bad thing, but...
Yeah, we all do that. Yeah.
I want all teachers to be appreciated for what they do.
Do you have a line, like, when people ask you, like, oh, what's that like? Like, what do you tell them?
Crazy, but I love it. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but it is, it's crazy, but I love it. Like, I love the craziness. I would not like being a teacher if it wasn't, you know, these little things on a daily basis that keep me going, putting these fires out and having fun with it.
And then what's something about education or teaching more broadly that you, again, wish more people knew, think is more important than people realize who aren't doing this every day?
Like I said, leading an education with that social-emotional aspect is so important. And I wish more people knew and parents knew and community and, you know, that you really have to lead with that love, or nothing's going to be successful. And we try so hard to educate, and, you know, meet these testing scores and meet all this. But it's not about the testing scores. And I told my students that the other day when they took their placement exam. I said, I'm proud of you for taking this placement and scoring. But the biggest thing that day, and what I'm proud of you is that the lady in the cafeteria told me that you were the most respectful group of students that she's ever had. So it's not about the test you took. It's about you being a good person. And so I wish that was more emphasized in school as well.
Harder to put a number on, right?
Like, yes.
You can't say that your social emotional score is 63.
No, exactly. Such a good way of putting it. Like, you're just a good-hearted person. And they were surprised to hear that from me. They're like, no, you don't mean that. You wish we could have done better on the math. I'm like, no, it's not that. It's just you being a great human being and caring about others too, and seeing that that's going to make you successful. Those soft skills and those jobs are going to take you a lot farther than those, you know, learning how to do Microsoft Word. If you just know how to have that conversation with people and have empathy for others, then that's going to lead you farther and keep the job.
Right. Obviously, you know, it's important to, you know, try your best, do well on those things, but no one's going to be like toasting you at your wedding and being like, and he got a 31 on his ACT.
Right? I took it three times. That's like, right. I know. But nobody's going to remember you for that. They're going to remember you for being there for them, or in that tough time, you listened to them. And I hope that education continues to do that.
Yeah, it's another thing, again, like I think that we all know that intuitively, but it's difficult to share that with students in a way that they feel like you actually mean it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you do it on a daily basis and you really instill that, and you, they really start to realize it.
Yeah. Well, it's Friday now. You got a weekend to look forward to. What are you looking forward to in the classroom over the next week or so?
I mean, Thanksgiving break is a crazy time, but next Tuesday we have, it's called a wellness day, and we have the whole afternoon where kids can sign up for sessions and go to different types of wellness.
Ooh, like what? What are we talking?
Just making fidgets or fun. Going on a nature walk or, I mean, there's so many opportunities, and I love that our school started this, and I'm teaching a calming meditation with one of my coworkers. And I love doing that every year. And I've been really working on it. And we just, it's so enjoyable to have kids that I don't see on a daily basis too, and get out there and meet new kids. And so that's one of my favorite days of the year, and we have that on Tuesday.
Wow, the calming meditation. That sounds great.
You got to have that.
We feel like we should end with that here. We should just put that at the end of the podcast, is get a little bit of meditation to kind of put us in a nice headspace as we move into the weekend.
Oh, yes, definitely. That's my jam. That's how I roll. Or you're not going to have a fun weekend if you don't just decompress from everything that happened in the week and then appreciate what happened and then move on from that. And do what's best for you.
That's right. So if you're listening to this right now, and these episodes do come out on Fridays, so people are looking forward to the weekend. So I just, you know, I'm going to recommend people take that nature walk. I think that's what they should do.
It's beautiful outside. It's beautiful here in DeKalb. It's gorgeous.
The best. It's like a little bit cold sometimes. Yes. But like in the way that when the weather changes, we don't quite hate the cold weather. There's a part of it where it hits your face and you're like, oh yeah, I'm alive. I'm alive.
Yes. But it's 70 tomorrow, and it's going to be, I mean, that's a great opportunity before all the leaves fall to take those nature walks. I love a good podcast and listen into that on my little nature walk.
There you go.
Even if it's in my backyard.
By the time this comes out, it'll probably be a lot colder. But,
I know. Sorry. Sorry to rub it in.
Enjoy it when you can.
Yes.
All right. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for taking the time to
talk to us. Thank you. You're phenomenal, and I appreciate you taking the time, and I'm sad to leave. Well, I really had fun today, so thank you.
That was my conversation with Ottawa High School special education teacher Ashley Carls. Thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, please feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on our show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Ashley. Send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Wherever you're hearing this, subscribe, leave us a rating, share it with a friend. It's the best way to get even more educators, even more perspectives on the show. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of this show. And we will be back in 2 weeks, December 19th. I'm a huge sucker for a good best of list, so on that episode, we'll be bringing you some of our favorite conversations of 2025. I've been your host, Peter Medlin. This is Teacher's Lounge.